Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of The Roundtable. I am your host, Mickey Hall. This show is presented by the Multi-Ethnic Sports Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame was founded by Arif Khatib in 2000 to give the world an opportunity to better understand the impact African Americans made in professional sports and society. We presented induction ceremonies in New York, Seattle, Puerto Rico, Los Angeles, Ethiopia, Nairobi, Kenya, Virgin Islands, Houston, Atlantic City, Philadelphia, Oakland Bay Area, Las Vegas, Palm Springs, Sacramento, and Halifax, Nova Scotia. Please visit our website at www.afrosportshall.com. to check out all the latest and happenings that are coming up. Don't forget that today's show will be archived 1 hour after this live broadcast, so you can listen at your leisure. Before I bring on my guests, last night the sports world lost a great athlete, Joseph Henry White. JoJo White transitioned Tuesday at the age of 71. The Boston Celtics, whom White played for nearly 10 seasons, issued a statement that says, "We are terribly saddened by the passing of the great JoJo White. He was a champion and a gentleman, supremely talented and brilliant on the court and endlessly gracious off it. JoJo was a key member of two championship teams, an NBA Finals MVP, a gold medal winning Olympian, and a Hall of Famer. His contributions to the team's championship legacy may have only been surpassed by the deep and lasting impact that he had in the community. The thoughts and sympathies of the entire Celtics organization are with the White family." I had the pleasure of meeting JoJo and the Celtics back in 1977-78, when I was a sports editor for the local school newspaper. The Celtics at that time were spending time practicing at the Massachusetts Maritime Academy in Buzzards Bay. Yes, there is a place called Buzzards Bay. It's on Cape Cod. JoJo was the man I was going to marry, and I even wrote it down in a letter. And when he agreed to the interview, this girl was over the moon. I remember being so nervous as he sat across from me. But once the interview began, he was so gracious and answered all of my questions. That is and will always be one of my greatest moments. My thoughts and prayers to his family. And it's only fitting today to talk about my love, especially basketball. Today's guest is not only a superstar on the court, but off the court as well. Ruthie Bolton, Mighty Ruthie as her friends will correct you, is a superstar not only on the court, and yes, she can still throw down, but off the court as well. Ruthie is a player, coach, two-time Olympian, bodybuilder, motivational speaker, teacher, author, former Army soldier, wife, mother, my friend. And we are going to talk about all of that. The Roundtable is honored to welcome Ruthie Bolton. Welcome, Mighty Ruth.
What's up, lady? That's an amazing introduction. I don't know if I deserve that.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. How are you?
I am wonderful. I'm wonderful. You know, I'm just keeping it moving, trying to make it happen, trying to keep making a difference. So I'm, you know, there was no grass growing under my feet.
That's for sure. That's for sure. And you know, you were so gracious to spare your time with us. I want the viewers to know that there might be a little bit of noise in the background. I know you're in travels right now, and you have those two precious darling of children with you. So hi, Hope, and hi, Christopher.
So hi. Look, they back. I told them to be quiet, so they're scared to talk.
Now they're quiet. Well, that's quite all right. That's quite all right. Ruthie, you are just an inspiration to everyone. And
well, you know what? I'm thankful that I can be. You know, I'm thankful that I can be.
You know, I want to just give a brief rundown on your history for our listeners who are just discovering you. You were born in Lucydale, Mississippi.
It's called Lucydale.
Lucydale, okay.
L-U-C-D-A-L-E.
Lucydale, Mississippi. How was that?
You know what? Country, a lot of fields. We grew up on about 10 acres. Horses, cows, chickens. It was a lot, but it was fun though. You know, we grew up, I have only 11 sisters and 8 brothers. And so we grew up learning how to share. We grew up not really wanting to share all the time, but you know, it's hard when you got 20 people and there's only like 5 cookies left. You know, that was the biggest challenge. It's like, I had a sweet tooth too. I was always trying to, you know, get something. My mom said, if it ain't enough to share with everybody, you can't get it. I'm like, well, somebody got to eat it. Why not me? but a lot of values my parents taught me and just really, really gave me an amazing foundation that really set me up and propelled me into a lot of things. And I'm thankful for that foundation. And as a kid, you don't always understand why your parents do what they do, especially if you're a PK kid, preacher's kid.
Exactly.
It's very, very challenging, very challenging, you know, the expectations of being this perfect child and stuff like that. But you know what? In hindsight, it was a beautiful thing, and I'm thankful for it.
Yes, that's right. For our readers who don't know, your family values are very strong, and you credit both your parents. Your father, who is a minister, and your mother, who was very steadfast in making sure that you and your brothers and sisters were just doing the right thing.
Yes, yeah, I know it's you know, and I know sometimes I can only imagine, you know, them raising kids, and they had to, some of my older siblings had to be parents too, so that we could you know, my oldest brother, he would spank us if he was in charge of us. So my dad's parents was always leaving the older one responsible when we left. So yeah, it was definitely my dad was big on discipline, and listen, what was wrong on Monday was wrong on Tuesday. He didn't change his discipline with the weather. You know, if we couldn't jump on the couch on Tuesday, it was wrong on Wednesday. So we didn't have to wonder where he was coming from. He was always pretty transparent, you know, so that was a blessing.
Yes, yes. Now, you ended up going to Auburn. You kind of followed your sister there?
Yeah, I followed my sister. I was wanting to play basketball, but I wasn't as talented as she was, and so I had my struggles, and I was, you know, a lot of colleges didn't want me, and that was a tough place, you know, for a teenager. And I just, and when I tell the story, I know I don't, you know, go into detail. The synopsis of the story is that she was highly sought after, top colleges wanted her. I was a sister that wasn't as good and didn't really get recruited. And that was a challenge for me. I'm like, that was disappointing to deal with the rejection and dealing with that pain. But my dad was there to instill about faith and about you can't worry about what people say about you or think about you or perceive about you. Just don't let it be true. And he just told me to stay strong in my faith, keep a good attitude, and work hard. And those three things he told me, he said, just that simple. He said, I live my life simple. He said, you know, this is a quote that to all listeners that listen, I want them to write this one down. They said, if you're taking life with you just a few principles, you won't have to carry a suitcase full of rules. If you're taking life with you just a few principles, you won't have to carry a suitcase full of rules. And so he was like, the principles that I live by is your attitude, your faith, your attitude, and how hard you work. So those three things don't one can ever, ever take from you. Can ever take from you, no matter who you are, where you go, no matter what your financial status is, no one can ever take that from you.
That's so true. That's so true. But, you know, you do. And as you go around the world speaking about this, you know, you talk about it, about not being recruited. But, girl, you ended Auburn with, let me see if I remember now. You played 132 games. You ended up with, I think, something close to 1,200 points in your career.
I had a horrible shot in high school. Did I make that many shots?
Your field goal percentage was at 51%. What do you mean you had a horrible shot?
I didn't shoot a lot in college. I was, I think it was something had to do with my bad Jerry curl. Made all my shots fall off the rim. Had me leaning too far to the right.
Was that what it was? You know, you watch
Jerry curl.
Man. But no, you were 50% for your three pointers and your feet.
You know what?
Three.
But you know what, if I might add, I was leading in assists for a while, I think up until like about three years ago, and I didn't realize I was first in assists, and then somebody passed it about 4 or 5 years ago, so now I might be third, but I thought my ball handling was terrible. I was like, for me to even do what I did, and I didn't even know how to play basketball. At Auburn, I learned how to play basketball after college when I went, and I started playing with the national team. So I think what people were gravitated towards out of college was my work ethic and my tenacity, and that I refused to be denied. You know, I had a no-nonsense attitude, like, okay, if it's going to get it, I'm going to get it. You know, when the ball goes out of bounds, I don't wait till to hear a whistle. I don't wait till I hear a whistle. I run. I get it. I ain't stopping until I got it in my hand, until I retrieve it.
I know. You know, not only in Auburn, I mean, the Monarchs, I mean, you were a bear on the court. You know, you went after every ball until the final buzzer sounded.
Well, you know what, I felt like that created a sense of urgency when I wasn't recruited, and I felt like, you know, why me? And I felt like my basketball dream was being taken away. And then, so I really treated the thing real serious. I got really serious about it, you know, about my work ethic and not leaving any room for error, not leaving any stones unturned. I really just had this work ethic and this resilience about myself. I didn't want to risk being denied or rejected anymore. Anymore. So that's why I kept working hard. I always went above and beyond. If the coach said do 25 push-ups, I did 35.
See, wow, and you know, and to this day, that's how you are. Every time we speak, I'm here, you're there, you still have that nose to the grind worth ethic.
I said it again, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last part.
Oh, I just said you to this day, you still have that work ethic of just keep your nose to the ground and you never give up. You know?
Yeah, you know, giving up is not an option, you know, with me. It's like I persevere and I just, to me, I don't know how to quit. I don't know how to give up because I've had to fight for everything I got. But it really gave me tough skin, you know, tough skin. It's like, you know what made, you know, what made Muhammad Ali such a great fighter? Not because he held a punch, because he could take a hard punch and still stand, you know. And so that's what, you know, my experience has done for me, going through the struggles and the valleys and feeling like quitting. You know what? And I really want to add this. You know, people feel like, you know, you're not perfect. You go through moments of doubt. You go through moments of confusion. You know, do I, you know, persevere? The key is that not if you ever felt like quitting, because you know what? If you're not working, if you don't feel like quitting at least three times doing something, you ain't working hard enough. You know, if you don't get tired and say, you know what, why? Do I got the strength? Ask yourself, do I got the strength to go on? You know, I question myself a lot of times, but you know what? But the value, that my purpose and my passion overwhelm or camouflage my doubt and my fear. You're going to have fear. You know, why do you need courage if you don't? Why you need courage if you've never had fear?
Mm-hmm.
So I've had fear, but you know what? But my purpose and my passion and my desire and my resilience always overtake that fear. And that's a contribution to my dad teaching me about, you know what, don't let no one put anything on your record. People's perception of you, that's just their perception. Don't get mad at them. You know, it's like, and you have to just, and don't take it personal. It's like, you know what, I know who I am. And use that and go on, and that's just gonna. And the thing about it is, someone's always watching you, always watching your life, you know. And I've had people that, you know, that just watch me and just say, man, just watching you play. Because I know I would say, and when I'm done playing basketball, if all you can remember is that I played basketball, then I've done a bad job with the rest of my life. And for the listeners that are listening, when we're done with this, if all you can remember, if my name come up tomorrow, next week, if all you can remember that I played basketball, then I've done a bad job with this podcast, with this interview. Because my message and my story go way beyond the game. Now, the game has got me to a place, but my faith and my character has kept me in this place, and my resilience.
Wow, and this is why you were so well loved, because you do speak from your experience. You know, you talk about this resilient, and yes, your basketball career took you around the world.
Yeah, it is. It's taking me a lot of places, you know, because you know what? And I love it. You know, I do a lot of stuff for U.S. Embassy, organization called Beyond the Borders of Sports United, and I've been to Bangladesh, Papua New Guinea, Saudi Arabia, Africa, Russia, and Ukraine. And we this program is building lives through sport.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the portion that, to me, why I enjoy the most, you know, is that tonight, you know, I enjoy the game I played and been great to me. But now it's about now empowering each other. It's about teaching others how to turn their pain to power. And that's what I'm thankful for. You know, my first book, The Ride of a Lifetime, we're talking about my career, just sports, okay? Is it, I endured the ride. You know, there are times I felt like getting on quick, but I didn't. I stayed the course. And now my second book is from pain to power, because a lot of people go through pain. I've seen it internationally, the hurt that people go through. Now, what do you do with that pain? And so this delights me to be able to go to Samoa and New Zealand and to empower these women, and then to see the gratitude that they have, to see how just the significant and how empowering it is to be there. And just your presence sometimes liberates people. When I go there, sometimes you think that I'm the Messiah coming, you know, and it just feels, and it's humbling, and it makes me feel like, make me more accountable. it makes me feel accountable. Like, you know, I got to do something with what this influence that God has given me. I got to be able to do something with that, you know?
And you do. You do. You have, like we said, you've gone around the world, and you don't only speak the basketball message. You speak the hope message.
Well, and you know, I just go ahead, keep going.
No, I was just going to say it. And every time I hear you, your message is just is something I need to hear, and I know it's what others need to hear.
Well, you know, to me, I don't try to be anybody but myself. I don't try to be, you know. And when I go and speak, you know, I didn't know I would be, you know, travel the world and do speaking, and I didn't know that what, you know, was in store for me. You know, I used to, you know, in college, I used to hate giving speeches on persuasive speech and informative speeches and all. You know, there are times where, you know, on my way to class, it's like I'm so terrified that I got to get up before the class in front of 25, 30 people that I'm like, I'm going to walk into class. And I just say, okay, Lord, can you have a sniper to shoot me? So I don't have to give this speech, you know. I'd be terrified of giving this speech, you know. But I wasn't confident in myself, and I didn't have much to say. But now I got a lot to say, you know. God has given me, you know, to whom much is given, much is required. And I'm actually speaking at a chapel on Friday, and I was still in limbo about what I was going to talk about. You know, speaking at William Jefferson University, and I really, you know, I said I don't want to go and share with these kids and try to make them think I know Bible, trying to throw all these verses at them. You know, I want to have a conversation with them. I want to share my story of trying my story of faith and resilience. And I want them to be, I want to connect with them. And it ain't about trying to show all the accolades and for them to praise me and put me on the pedestal. I could care less about that. You know, and when I go and I show my medals and I show, it's a purpose so that people can understand the process that I went through. I want the process to inspire you. If you think the medals are great, the process is going to be even greater. I'm understanding the tedious journey I've had to go through. You know, so that's what I'm thankful for, that I've been given this, you know, platform to really go and inspire and empower all across the country. And every time I go, it's get better and better. And I enjoy just the last trip in Samoa in October was just amazing with the women there. Just a gratitude, the kids, you know, playing basketball in flip-flops or no shoes, and they was happy and content. You know, and just and the women and stuff, and how, you know, they just felt so in awe that I was there. And I'm like, yes, I've been, you know, you may think that I bless you, but you bless me. So I'm thankful that, you know, that I've been able to really go spread the message internationally.
Right. Ruthie, let's talk a minute about your transition. When you retired and left the Monarchs in 2004, what was the next journey for you?
Say it again.
When you left the Monarchs in 2004, what was the transition from player to coach, front office, to spokesperson? How was that transition?
It was tough. It was really tough. I was still having one leg in, one leg out. You know, I didn't really want to retire. I was still trying to come back and play. And that was a tough place for me. There was a crossroad of a disappointment and confusion. I felt like, you know, I wasn't ready to retire, and I felt like I was forced into retirement. And it was hard, you know. But from that experience, I was able to develop a program, and that was a way that would help me heal. I would develop a program called Aim High. And they say, you know what? Stop feeling sorry for yourself. You got to aim higher. The same God that was there when you was playing and scoring 34 is the same God that's here now. And I had to aim higher I had to have change my mindset, my attitude. I had to aim higher than the frustration and the disappointment and setbacks. And what was going to help me to aim high is my mindset. You know, I had to aim higher than anger, aim higher than disappointment and stuff. So I started creating this ACASU program to help me heal and also to share it with other young people. And so I've been doing that. That's what I, so that helped me transition. Without that, I would have been lost because I was empty. You know, when you've done something for 25 years and all of a sudden you're not doing it anymore, that's a tough place to be. Very mm-hmm. tough place.
It is. And, you know, you found your next passion. And there are a lot of other athletes that unfortunately don't find that. But your struggles still were there for you, but you just hung in there. Your coaching position at William Jessup, isn't that where you're going back to?
I'm going there to speak. Yeah, at the same college, yeah, to speak. Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. No, because you coached there. Was it? You were there for a couple of years coaching.
Yes, I coached there for 4 years.
Okay.
Yeah, no. 4 years. It was a good experience. I'm like, it was good. I enjoyed it. It was awesome. It was an awesome experience.
I know.
Yeah.
Now, how did you flip the mindset from player to coach? How was that transition?
Say it again.
How was the transition from player to coach?
You know what? It was actually good, though. I actually wish I had coached more while I was playing. I probably would have been a better player. It probably would have been a better seriously, it was
really?
It was good. I but it's hard because you know what you want. You can impact change while you're playing, but you can't make someone, you know, you can't make someone, you can't make the players play like you play, and that's a hard thing. That's a hard thing, you know. And so it's like, because you can know it, you can go out and fix a problem. You can go out and fix it, but you can't, you got to hope your players are ready to play. So that's the only thing, knowing that I can still play and knowing that I can, you know, I had to hope my players are always ready to play, and when I need something fixed, I can go fix it, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's you had a – do you think you'll be back to coaching again if the opportunity came up?
Yeah, you know, I'm not opposed to coaching. I do a lot of player development now with athletes. I do some training. I do some player development. But if an opportunity came up, I wouldn't, you know, because that's another way of mentoring. I love mentoring and making a difference. And if it's through coaching or after-school programs or whatever, I'm fine. So I have started to look into coaching opportunities because I'm more interested in the player development, sports psychology aspect of it.
Yeah, I could see you filling that need. You're absolutely right with that. Because you've actually lived it, and I would love to follow your game plan with the mentality and the focus.
Oh, thank you.
Let's talk a minute about your playing the two Olympics and your world travels. When you travel, what's one of the main differences that you try to, I guess, teach the different cultures in with your story?
Repeat the question again.
As you travel, you were two gold medals. In Sydney and in Atlanta, but the World Games in Sydney and Berlin. How, when you take that experience, how do you, I guess, speak your message to foreigners?
You know, I really just talk about message of persevering hope. You know, I just try to talk about overcoming whatever you're going through, and it might not be basketball. It may be anything. It could be anything personal. You know, it's like, how do you overcome? How do you become a better person through your challenges? And let your pain become your power.
Let your setback be a setup for a comeback. Let your opposition be an opportunity. And I know that all those sounds cliche, but that's just the way, that's just how I think. I refuse to give my joy. I refuse to let you take my joy because of what. I'm not going to let you put, you can't put anything on my record no matter what you think about me, your perception. And I'm not going to let you ruin my day. I'm not going to let circumstances ruin my day. And so I use the basketball terms, like, you know, I use what I've gone through. And I feel indebted. I feel indebted to share my story, my after-school program, my books. I feel like when God gives you something, it ain't for you to keep, it's for you to share it. He give you pain. You're going to keep your pain. You're going to share your pain. Because the more you give, the more God gives to you. And so I'm thrilled that I've been chosen. You know, many are called, but few are chosen. I'm not trying to sound so religious, but many have been called, but few are chosen. I know He's chosen me because of just what I've gone through. And He put people in position that can be able to endure the storm. And now that I've done it perfectly, I've fallen flat on my face. I've made a lot of mistakes. But I get up knowing that He's bigger than anything that I've gone through or will go through. And I'm thankful for that. Very thankful.
Yes. Yes, indeed. We're at the halfway mark. I just have one announcement, and then I want you to give your website, how people can reach you, all that. But I just want to tell the listeners that the Multi-Ethnic Sports Hall of Fame is honored to have on display just a small sampling of the memorabilia at Oakland City Hall. The Hall of Fame wants to give a big thank you to Council Member Lynette McElhaney for recommending the Hall of Fame for this honor. So if you're in the area, tell your friends, stop by, go see some of the incredible history of sports figures that you will not learn in school. The display is for the entire month of January, and it is on display for the city of Oakland to enjoy.
Oh, awesome.
Yes, I know. We're Aretha and I were just ecstatic with that. So yes, and Aretha does send his best to you and the family.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Ruthie, tell the listeners your contact info, the website, what's coming up, where they can find you, all of that.
Well, my website is mightyruthiebolton.com. That you can go there and leave a message or reach out. You could also, I have... Unfortunately, my Facebook is full right now, but anybody can message me. I know a lot of people just messaged me last week when the documentary re-aired, Mighty Ruthie re-aired. So people can message me if you need me, if you just need some encouragement, or if you have someone need to contact me about speaking, feel free to go to MightyRuthieBolton.com is my website, and also Mighty Ruthie Bolton on my Facebook, which I'm not the biggest Facebook person, but I communicate through Messenger a lot. And then, if someone wants to call a number, they can actually call my assistant at 210-289-1186. 210-289-1186 is my assistant, Nancy number. And, she changed her email. I was trying to find her email. I can probably give it to you by the end of the. I was trying to find her email, but you can give my email, which I'm okay with. My email is ruru525@aol.com. That's ruru525@aol.com, and that phone number was Nancy, my assistant. So I'm always in the business of empowering young kids and women, and I go to schools, I speak at churches. And so it's about every day when I get up and say, what can I do to make a difference? What can I do to empower someone's life? That's my MO at this stage in my life. It's about how can I, it's service above self. How can I be of service to you and empower you?
Yeah. Ruthie, let's spend a little while and talk about your pain to power, because I know that's what you've been going around and speaking on right now. Tell everyone about it.
Okay. Yes, pain to power, that's sort of derived from unfortunately, domestic violence. I lived during the peak of my career, during the Olympic World Championship for like 10 years. I went through domestic violence. So the documentary, ESPN did a documentary last summer on my life story, Mighty Ruthie. And so from that documentary, I wrote a book, From Pain to Power, talking about what I've gone through. And not trying to have a pity party, not for anyone trying to feel sorry for me, but I'm thankful that my pain has been turned to power, that I can still love, I can still smile, and I can still soar and fly and spread my wings. And so I'm thankful for that. So we all have pain. What do we do with our pain? So it's about a purpose and process, what you go through, your purpose and process. And my purpose is way bigger than basketball, and the process has been tough. I've had to go through, different things, but I know that every day I get up, no matter what I go through, that God is bigger. And that's as simple as I get. And so how can I turn my pain to power? And the last part of that, turn that pain to power, is recognizing where your power true come from. And that's finding gratitude and also learn how to forgive. How to find gratitude in whatever you do. I find gratitude. And that's what reminded me when I went overseas. I'm not leaving about gratitude and about how important gratitude is. And I'm thankful for that because I'm reminded when I go overseas, the gratitude and that gratitude keeps us, it's a wholeness of who you are. It unlocks. It unlocks the wholeness of life, gratitude. And I'm thankful. I'm thankful that gratitude that I understand what it means and everything. So God is good and I'm thankful that I can be used as a vessel, that I've been chosen to be a vessel. I'm really, really, really beyond thankful,
Yes.
The book From Pain to Power, you can also get that on my website. It will be on Amazon soon, not as of yet. We haven't done the official launch, but the book is still available. And it's really, I've gotten a lot of reviews from a lot of people that say, man, it's very touchy. I get very transparent about what I've gone through, and I don't mind it. I don't mind being vulnerable about what I've gone through because I know that at the end of the day, if someone's life is saved, understand what I went through with domestic violence, if someone is changed and impacted, I would risk what people, I would risk being, having people think a certain thing about me or being judged to really help someone else because I didn't realize how unhealed I was. This happened years ago, and it still was painful. It happened years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It happened years ago, and it was still painful. It happened years ago, but it was still painful. And until I didn't heal until I started talking about it. It didn't heal until I started talking about it. No. So I'm thankful for that, and thankful that I can. And the more I share, the more I heal. The more I share, the more I heal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thankful for that. And so that's what I want women to know. They have a voice in that. I'm embracing them with my arms wrapped around them. In October, I went to women prisons in October. I went to a lot of women conference and spoke about what I've gone through. I'm sorry to hear a little bit of noise. I spoke about what I'm going through, and it's just, to me, I'm so delighted to know that a lot of women just have given me that reading my story have given them closure. I've been emails and letters from, thank you for your word. Thank you for giving me closure to what I've gone through. you for being there for me. And just the fact that they know I went through it empowers them. And I'm beyond thankful. It reminds me that I'm glad that I was obedient and I started sharing my story, because not only was I healing, other people were healing also.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What advice can you give to women who might find themselves in this in an abusive situation?
I would say make sure that they don't try to go through it alone. I'm not gonna, you know, try to tell them when should they walk away, because it's hard. Everybody has to go through their rock bottom. Mm-hmm. What is your rock bottom? But I would encourage women to say, you know what, look in the mirror. Look in the mirror and try to like who you see in spite of what you think you've done, or you think you're not good enough, or you think you don't, you know, you're not valued. Know that there's something significant about you. You were created for a reason. And so straighten your crown in spite of what you think you've gone through. When you feel unworthy, straighten your crown and know that you are loved. No matter how much the abuser makes you think you're not, you are loved. No matter how much they try to escalate your mistakes, you know you're not perfect, but they're trying to make you feel like, you know, that any little thing you do makes you a bad person. But love yourself. Listen to your heartbeat. You know, I'm about to start a program that's going to be going internationally about the beat to the drums. We're going to be creating drums, and we're going to be going internationally and talking about, you know what, you have a voice, you matter. And that you have a voice, you can speak, you can start celebrating because you have a voice, and your life matter now, and that you could keep hold on to your mighty power, not get it, because you already have it. You just got to hold on to it, keep your mighty power, and that's my program that I do with girls is keep your mighty power, keep your voice, keep the substance of who you are, you know. And so, those are things that I enjoy doing, and now that I'm playing basketball, is creating a gateway, letting the women know that, yeah, I've been through that. I've gone through doubt. I've gone through disappointment. I've gone through not feeling valued enough. I've gone through feel like, you know, that I was unworthy. I said, but I broke through that because I also surround myself with people. I did something that I love. So I encourage women to say, find something that you're good at doing. And continue to do. I don't care if it's weaving. I don't care if it's pain, whatever it is, there's something you do that's significant. And find your value, find your voice, you know, find your place of deliverance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's a tough place, and everybody's time frame is different. You know, everybody's time frame is different what they go through, you know. So, but I'm thankful that, you know, that I can live to tell about mine and share mine. And that's why I speak so much on forgiveness, because no matter what you go through, you hold on to resentment and unforgiveness, and you'll never really start to live. You'll still live in bondage. And so I talk about the importance of, you know, letting go and understanding your pain that you go through, that your purpose and your peace has to be bigger than your pain. You know, I was watching a show the other night, a movie called Shaq, and it's an amazing movie, and it just talked about when we go through pain, we lose people in our lives, and we just hurt. But when you focus so much on your pain, you lose sight of God, and that's just from a spiritual standpoint, that just really resonated with me, because that's what I'm trying to say in my book, The Power. Let your pain allow you to propel into a place of victory, a place of triumph. And, you know, and I travel the world and I just, you know, I open up and I, there was a gentleman heard me speak. He had heard me speak for years. He heard me speak, and it was one of the biggest compliments. He said, Ruthie, I've heard you speak over and over again at schools and colleges. And he said, when you speak, one of the reasons it's so intriguing because you allow people in, you say, it doesn't matter what I've done, how, you know, the Olympics, the Hall of Fame, you allow people in to come in and have a sit down. Let me have a conversation with you. You give people access to your heart. And I just hadn't really heard it put that way. And I just say, it really was very flattering. And I was just thankful that he recognized that. And that's really what I'm trying to do, is just invite people into this world of peace. And not a world of perfect world, but a world of peace in the midst, you know, of you climb a hill and you can still walk up in victory. I can still stand in victory with my hands toward the sky in victory. And so that's really what I'm trying to portray in my message. Is, you know, you're mighty in your walk and your talk, and you are mighty in spite of your shortcomings. Your setback can be set up for a comeback. And I'm thankful that, you know, God is using me to be that vessel, and that you're bigger than it all. He's got something, there's something greater waiting for you. And it's like when you run it up a hill, you know, no one really likes hills, you know. Like, I love hills, though. And it's like at that moment, and when you're so fatigued and you feel like you can't take another step and you feel like that's your weakest, that is your strongest moment, because your breakthrough is about to happen. Most of the time, our breakthroughs happen right before we quit.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, and that's one thing, I don't, you know what, I don't want to sound like I'm preaching. That's why I was just talking to a friend about, I'm going to speak at a school Friday, and I said, I just want to share my story. I don't want to preach to them. They hear enough preaching. I don't want to sound like I have all the answers. I just want to share with them, share my message for 10, 12 minutes, and then sing a song and keep it moving. I don't want to be like I came in. I'm trying to sound so, like, I throw a whole bunch of scriptures at them and trying to sound like, I want to share my story. I want to share my pain with you. I want to share my moment, my journey with you. I want to try to give you a synopsis of my journey, tap into what really bounds me and motivates me. And as tenacious as I was on the basketball court, I'm the same tenacity now for God. How I'm trying to rip that ball away from those Brazilian girls, that's the same way I am trying to do it for Christ. I'm trying to, you know, I just got this resilience and this mindset. And there was, you know, a lot of people, I go through a lot. There are times I go through a lot, and I share a lot to you. I read a lot of journals. I share my pain. I sometimes write and I share tears. But I share tears because that's sort of part of me healing. You know what? I'm going to get through this. And I know that no matter what I go through, that he's bigger, and that I'm going to get through it somehow. And that's what keeps me going.
Yeah. Ruthie, sitting here listening to you, what's coming to my mind right now is I see what you went through, the abuse and, you know, trying to deal with the Olympics and all that pressure, to what these young sisters went through with this predator. You know, when you have facing the traumatic issues like that, you know, I mean, it's got to be more than faith. How can you tell these young girls you got to use your voice? Don't suffer in silence.
You know, I know it's a tough place. You know, I've been there, and I know it's hard because you don't want, sometimes you feel embarrassed, sometimes you feel like, you know, who wants to hear my problems, or you feel just like, you know what, I'm going to do it alone. But don't try to do it. Don't try to do it alone. Don't try to pretend you know it all. Don't try to act like you know it all and that you know all the answers. Like, I want anybody listening to just say, you know what, talk to somebody. Don't try to do it alone. Have someone that you can be transparent with about what you're going through. And there's also someone going through violence. Because domestic violence is on a broad scale. It don't have to be physical. It can be psychological. They have numbers. They have phone numbers that, and actually in the back of my new book, From Pain to Power, they have 1-800 numbers you can call.
Mm-hmm.
They want to get help. Sometimes you might not want to share it with a best friend. You may feel embarrassed. You want to keep it to yourself. But don't keep it, because if you need to go to someone, you don't have to say your name. You can just say, hey, I'm such and such. This is what I'm going through. Can you help me? Can you guide me? And they have numbers for that. They have people for that.
Yeah. You know,
they have organizations, people you can talk to that help you to open up and help you to, well, you can just, they, you can, sorry, you could be a they could be a you could be a soundboard where you can share your story with them, and you could just share your heart and your pain, and they can direct you. You know, I have a friend right now. I said, hey, I know. I said it's real hard for me to watch you and say, because I've been where you are. But I said, but you, if you don't, I said, anytime you want, you can pick up the phone, dial this number, and say, hey, this is what I'm going through. You know, what should I do? Or I just, or let them, you know what, they might not be able to, you might not do anything, but just have, for them to be a listening ear. So don't go through this alone. Please don't.
Yes. You mentioned how you don't want to preach. You know, I've heard you speak on several occasions. trust me, it's not what you do. You speak from your heart. You tell your story in a way that, you know, I've never seen before or felt.
Oh, Lord. Well, I appreciate it. You know what? At the end of the day, I want it to, you know, to resonate. I want to connect, and that's why, you know, matter of fact, I since I've been on the phone, I got a text reminding me I'm supposed to speak at that chapel tomorrow at another place, and I was like, I wouldn't do, you know, I totally forgot about it. I was like, okay. But you know what? But I'm thankful that I'm asked to speak and share my faith, and I actually, when I'm in an atmosphere where I can talk about my faith freely, it feels good, you know, but I don't want to, you know, I don't like to disrespect people to talk about my faith, because my dad will always say, you don't have to beat people off the head with the Bible. You know, you just, people can see through your walk, through your talk, through your attitude, through your life, that you don't have to try to stay on a mountaintop and say, look at me.
Mm-hmm. By far, Ruthie, you do not do that at all.
Thank you.
You know, yes, we know. We all have the Bible trainings, but when you speak, girl, I mean, you just, your words flow so smoothly, and you do. You don't preach. You speak to everyone on their level, and I think that's why our young sisters they love you. So wherever you go, these young sisters and even these young brothers are running up to you.
You said my brother?
I said even the young brothers run up to you. It's not only the young sisters, you know, your family.
Yeah, I know, you know, I do. I do a lot of stuff with young boys now, too. Mm-hmm. I do talk to a lot more young boys and stuff. But, yeah, you know what, I feel like anytime I get in front of a group, I don't care who I get in front of a group, I feel like if God he brought you to it, he can bring you through. If he put me there, he gave me something to say.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how it's, yep.
Yes. Ruthie, spend a couple of minutes, because I don't know if people know this, but one, Auburn retired your number. Two, you have been inducted into the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame in Knoxville. And three, the Multi-Ethnic Sports Hall of Fame inducted you back in 2014.
And I've also been inducted into the Mississippi Hall of Fame in 2014.
See, look at this.
So I'm a four-time Hall of Famer, baby.
Look at that. you say it's,
and
not
I'm also a, too, I don't know if you know, in Sacramento I have my star. They also unveiled my star in Sacramento.
No.
On the ground. Yes, I have to get you some people. We got, you know what, when you come here, you gotta drop down and give me 20 push-ups on it.
You got it.
Don't underestimate your power, girl. You got it.
You might be able to get about three from me, but I'll
well,
push.
You can do some sets. You can do some sets.
Okay.
You can do four sets of five.
Okay, there we go. Thank you. You know, but what they don't maybe know is you are also a bodybuilder.
Yeah, back in the day, I'm like, I did it. And it was fun because it was something that kept me disciplined, kept me focused. And I had it was tough. The biggest thing for me about being a bodybuilder was not eating not eating cereal. Because, listen, I love my cereal and sweets. There ain't no secret about that one. But I love when you can, you know, discipline is doing something you may want to do, but don't do it. It's doing things the right way. So the right way for me to, do, you know, to have the body I want, I had to go through some discipline setback. You know, so I love the challenge. I love sort of facing, looking at adversity right in the face, saying, you know what, you ain't got me, I got you. I always love that edge to have on the adversity, you know. And so, like when I'm on the Stairmaster doing level, and my plan was to do level 6 or whatever, and I might be at level 4 and I'm exhausted. And then I get up to level, you know, I was like, I could just stop. I've already got my medal. Why am I proving? Then I go up to level 5. Oh, you know, I'm at level 6 because, you know what, I want to always hold myself accountable. When I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to push until if it calls me to pass out. I'm going to push and push, push, and that's sort of my mentality. And so, and also, too, like I said, if I'm on a Stairmaster, if I ain't felt like quitting at least 2 or 3 times, then I didn't work hard.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah. Is there anything that you have not done?
Well, you know I was the first lieutenant in the Army, too.
That's right. We didn't even discuss that. That's right.
We'll do that for next time. There's a lot. We can't get all this in one show. You know, you got to invite me back, and I got to just, you know, there's a lot more, it ain't no big deal. I'm just a phone call away, and I can always come in, you know. Yeah, so it's no big deal.
Exactly. I know. We have covered so much, Ruthie, and I can't thank you enough, my friend. One more time before we go, let them know your website and how they can follow you.
MightyRuthieBolton.com is my website. You can also send me a messenger, MightyRuthieBolton on Facebook. You can message me, say, hey, I listen to the podcast. You know, I enjoyed you, just, you know, and just encouragement, or you may have, you know, something you want me to do. So I also, you may help when you come to your school, your church, or your event. You know, I do a lot of that stuff, too, and I also have an assistant. Her number again, her name is Nancy. I don't know if I gave her name. Her name is Nancy Grace, and her number is 210-289-1186. And so, so those 3 ways you can get hold of me. And then I'm probably going to have you to attach my website maybe to yours. So if somebody reach out to you later, you know, some whatever, I could probably give you more stuff that you can always have to send. So if someone reach out to you a week, say, hey, you know, how can I get Ruthie? Ruthie, so you can always hold on to this information and give it to them.
That would be awesome. I would be honored to do that. Definitely. Definitely. Ruthie, we are coming to the close of the show, and I just want to thank you again.
You're welcome. No, you know what? Thank you, my dad. It's always good to be invited. Thank you for inviting me. And my last words with this would be, amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I found, was blind, but now I see. So let the grace of God continue to guide everyone that's watching. God bless you. Thank you. Or listening, rather.
Ruthie, that's the only way to end this show. Thank you again, my friend. We will definitely have you back on. To all our listeners, stay tuned next week for another great show. Again, this show will be archived 1 hour after this broadcast. So if you missed any part of Ruthie's information, play it back at your leisure. Ruthie, I can't thank you enough. Please thank Hope and Christopher and Caesar for me for allowing you this time. And I look forward to seeing you soon, my friend.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. And I look forward to what we're going to continue to do in the future and impact lives. Thank you. God bless you, young lady.
You too, honey. We'll talk soon. Take care,
okay, everybody. Okay.
Stay safe. Till the next time. Good night.
Good night.